Hey guys, it's me, Jen.
And it's Carrie.
And we are back for, I believe this is episode 48. Are we on 48 already?
Yeah, we are on pace.
Alrighty.
We're on pace to do this on the anniversary.
Absolutely. That's going to be a hell of a Halloween anniversary. I couldn't have planned it better if I'd have planned it. So how you doing today, Carrie?
You know, pretty good. Pretty good.
Awesome. Me as well. The new job is working out.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It is working out well. I'm working 6 days a week, but other than that, everything's going swimmingly.
She works hard for the money.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Definitely. But there is money to be had, so I am happy.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I like getting paid every day. It's always nice. And no, I'm not doing bad things.
You're right.
No, guys, this is an actual legal job. Sorry to disappoint all of you gutter-minded individuals, but...
You're right.
But yeah. Anyway, we had decided a couple of weeks ago we were going to step out of the original box that I put the podcast in to begin with. And start branching out on a few of those degrees of separation between our two men, Tom Hiddleston and Johnny Depp. Now, we've done a couple of those so far. We've done Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr.
Yep.
We've done Alice herself, Miss Mia Wasikowski. Yes. Thank you. And I believe we decided today that we are going to talk about Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
Now, anybody who knows Marvel knows Paul Bettany played Vision in person, and he did the voice over for Jarvis in the Iron Man and Avengers movies. He also is very good friends with Johnny Depp. Matter of fact, his phone records, his text messages, and his emails were subpoenaed for Johnny Depp's defamation case against Amber Heard.
Were they?
Yes, they were.
I mean, I knew that they had some excerpts, but they...
Yes.
It was a subpoena order.
Oh, they went through his text messages and his emails for the last 9.5 years, since 2013.
God.
He said he didn't, you know, he understood why it was necessary, but he said it was one of the most embarrassing things that he's ever had to, you know, had somebody do to him, is to go through all of his personal emails and text messages and all of that. So, yeah, I can imagine it was pretty off-putting, but, you know, he didn't blame Johnny for it, of course. You know, but, you know, Johnny said some things he probably should not have said, so, you know. But he still maintained and won the case in the end, so, you know, whatever.
And hey, what a good friend.
Absolutely. Al Bettany has stood by him ever since they met on the set of The Tourist.
Yeah, they have worked on how many films together?
Three, thus far. They were together in The Tourist in 2010. Then Transcendence in 2014, and unfortunately, that horror of horrors, Mordecai.
You and Mordecai.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, no. Although I would have liked to have seen Bettany make Depp laugh so hard he fucking spewed his mustache across the room. I would have loved to have seen that.
I would love to see that blooper.
Bettany and Depp made Gwyneth Paltrow laugh so hard on set she pissed her pants.
That's actually something that I would want to put on my resume, and I'm not kidding.
Oh yeah, Johnny Depp made me pee my pants. Oh yeah, I would love that.
Wow, you must be a funny guy.
Yeah. Well, Paul Bettany is a natural comedian. At one point he made a joke at Statham, what's his name? Statham's?
Jason.
Yes. At his expense, and he said that, you know, one of his fans got really up in arms and wrote him a really nasty letter about it, and he said, looked in the camera and goes, "I am really sorry, Mom. I really can't afford to piss you off. I don't want to lose half my fan base."
You're right.
Now, yeah, Bettany.
You got the wrong guy.
Bettany is classic with his comedic skills. He's also a natural. Now his, okay, we'll start with his grandmother on his mother's side. Now his grandmother on his mother's side, her name was Olga Gwynn Kettle. And she had a successful career as a singer in musical theater.
Huh, okay.
Then you have his mother and father. Now, his mom was Ann Bettany, you know, Nee Kettle. She's a stage singer, theater teacher, and a stage manager. His father, Thane, T-H-A-N-E, Thane Bettany, dancer, actor, drama teacher, and godfather to Sophie, Countess of Wessex.
Wow.
Yeah. He was definitely born into the business. So, yeah, he definitely came about it honest. He's also a very accomplished guitar player. That's probably what brought him and Johnny together to begin with.
You know, from what I understand about Bettany, because before he even got into the MCU, I loved his work.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of, you know, wiki-walked him.
All right.
And I knew that he was from kind of a show business inclined family.
Right.
But there were a few disasters that befell the family.
There were a couple of just heartbreaking tragedies.
Yeah, and he kind of forsook those things.
He did. He took off when he was 16. Took off, went, moved into London proper, and became a busker.
Wow, right.
And he did so right around, right after his six, I believe his brother was six. His younger brother had a fall from, was he eight?
Yeah.
He had a fall from a pavilion and landed on the concrete and it killed him. Yeah, I mean, that's hard to take for anybody, but for a 16-year-old kid who pretty much probably feels like he should have been there to protect him. You know, because that's just the kind of person Bettany is.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine that he probably just said, nope, not doing it no more.
Right, right. He left it all behind. He dropped out, right?
He dropped out of high school. He busked for a while. And then he actually got a job in an elderly, I don't want to say a retirement center, because that's not quite what it is. It's an old folks home.
Yeah.
He got a job there, worked there for a year, and then eventually, you know, the light bulb came on, and he was like, oh, you know, I can do better than this, and enrolled in drama classes. But he had to be on his own for a little while first before he came to that realization. And he was on his own in the middle of London at 16. Not an easy thing, that.
No, no.
Yep.
And, you know, he was making money to survive at age 16.
Right.
Not because he was acting or whatever, but because his guitar was giving him money and feeding him.
That's right. Same as Johnny when he went to Hollywood.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, I've noticed, you know, they're often in a lot of MCU guys. You know, we talked about Jeremy Renner. You
uh-huh.
know, a lot of these guys are pretty good musicians. You know, Robert Downey Jr.
You know, Renner is. And then, of course, you've got the... It's amazing to me how many of these poor guys suffer from one type or another of social anxiety. You've got Ruffalo, who is not good with crowds. He, definitely has issues with that. You've got Depp and Downey Jr. that both have issues with depression, anxiety, a lot of the social anxiety. Depp never wanted to be in the spotlight, always wanted to be in the background, but of course his face kind of pushed him in the forefront. Downey Jr. was the same way. He He wanted to be on screen because that's what was expected of him, but he wanted to be behind the scenes because that's where he felt safer.
Gotcha. Right. And he kind of, it seems like with the stage, you know, he kind of knew the craft both on the stage and, if you will, front of the house and back of the house.
Exactly. Yeah. Bettany seems to be that same type.
Right.
He is an accomplished actor. He's a brilliant actor. He can do everything from drama to suspense to comedy to, spoof, farce, what have you. He can do it. He's great.
Yeah.
Did you know he's also a writer and a director and a co-producer?
Did not know that.
Yep. There was a film in 2014 called Shelter. I had never heard of it. I looked it up. Looks like something I would probably want to watch. But this is Bettany's directorial debut. The movie is called Shelter, and he also wrote and co-produced this movie.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's got his fingers in pretty much all of the different aspects of, you know, the craft, both in front of the camera and behind. He's extremely. And one of the reasons he was so willing and able to quit school, it was not really doing him a whole lot of good anyway. Anybody with my particular brand of brain problems will understand he has dyslexia. Now, you got to remember, he was born in 1971. Now, I was born a little after that, and dyslexia was not recognized as a learning disability when I was coming up. It was just something you dealt with and got over.
Yeah, he's about 6 months younger than I am. Yep. And I remember hearing about dyslexia as a diagnosis, you know.
When you were probably in your teen years or your early 20s.
Yep. Somewhere around age 20.
Yep, his birthday is May 27th, 1971, so, yeah, May 27th, that's actually not a bad day. I like that day.
Nice.
Got a couple of friends that are born on that day.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah, huh. High school. Oh, speaking of which, my cab driver that takes me to work every morning, I just recognized her yesterday. I used to go to school with her. That was kind of cool.
You know everybody.
No, this town is just the size of your pinky finger.
Okay, gotcha. That's what it is.
Yes, it's a very small town. Now, some of the more well-known roles before the MCU.
Oh, yeah.
A Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely did well in that one. And he got to know his future wife through that movie.
Right. And he made a fine choice.
Oh, yes. Yes. And he did not give her a choice.
How do you mean?
I'll explain. He had been crushing on Jennifer Connelly since 1986.
Labyrinth.
Since she came out with Labyrinth, right? With David Bowie. Of course, you know, he was crushing on her. I was crushing on Bowie. You know, we could have met, hooked up. Everybody would have been happy. Well, then he got the chance to co-star with her in A Beautiful Mind. Well, he got to know her while they were filming that movie, and the more he knew about her, the more he realized that it wasn't a crush, that he was truly in love with her.
Yeah.
But they were both seeing other people at the time. So he immediately, you know, broke off the relationship that he was in because he, you know, it wasn't right.
Okay.
And, you know, decided just to let things play out. Well, then the bombs happened. The September 11th attack here in the States. And it opened his eyes to just how quickly things can go south and just how far south they can go. So he spent the next 2 days calling producers, directors, other actors, doing everything he could to find out how to get in touch with her. And once he did get in touch with her, he proposed immediately. Before they were ever in a relationship. They had not dated. They had not even talked about having a relationship. And he straight out proposed, told her that he'd been in love with her forever, and they got married January 1st, 2003, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. January 1st, 2003. And then, of course, their son was born in 2003, and then they had a daughter in 2011.
Wow. The first child didn't take long.
The first child was probably already there, honey.
Right.
But, and, you know, I'm not saying, but, you know, that might have been part of the influence that, you know, convinced her to say yes. It might have been. And then again, you know what? She is rich, powerful, and can do right well on her own. She definitely does not need a man. So, you know, maybe not.
She has had a fantastic career in her own right.
Oh, yes, she has. And she is a brilliant actor, no matter how much I hate her for actually having met David Bowie.
Right.
So, yeah, she is fantastic. She's brilliant. She was brilliant at 13. She was brilliant at 15. And she's still brilliant to this day.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But, yeah, take a guess at what their son is named.
Have no idea.
Okay. Let me give you a clue or a little hint here. Let's see. The child's first name is someone that Bettany has worked with multiple times and is indeed a member of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay. I have no idea. And
the child's name is Stellan.
So is that's coincidence, though?
No, it is not. He was named after Stellan Skarsgård.
Named after him. Wow.
Yep. Bettany has admired Stellan Skarsgård for years and years. And he worked with him, let's see, on, of course, the MCU. But he also worked with him on, I want to say, A Beautiful Mind, but I may be mistaken on that. But yeah, he worked with Stellan before the child was even conceived as well. So, but yeah, he was named after Stellan Skarsgård. Now, Carrie, you have kids, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I know this. I'm just asking the question so that everybody who's listening knows it. You know how when your kids are...
He worked with them on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
That's it, that's it. Thank you. That's the movie.
And Dogville.
Yeah. Yep. So he had worked with him several times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, speaking of the children, you know how when your kids are young, especially, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes all the way up into 6 and 7 years old, yeah. They mimic you. They pattern their movements after yours. They mimic what you do and say. That's why you have to be careful not to curse around them and things like this, right?
I try my best personally, but yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
Right. Okay. Well, when the child was 2 years old, when Stellan was 2 years old, he made Paul quit smoking.
Paul, and I know how that is.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Paul noticed that Stellan was mimicking the movements the of smoking with an ink pen or a stick of chalk or, you know, whatever was at hand. And he said, nope, not happening. He quit completely.
Good man.
So, yeah, kids will either bring out the best in you or the worst, depending. So, but, yeah.
Sometimes both.
Sometimes both at the same time.
Yeah.
That one is something only parents will understand. The only people that will understand that comment are parents themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. What's your favorite movie from Paul?
You know, my first, and what a hell of a movie, my first exposure.
I think I know what it is, too.
Go ahead. You know what it is.
A Knight's Tale?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
It is A Knight's Tale, and great cast. And everybody that was involved in that
was brilliant.
Fantastic. But him as Chaucer, mm-hmm. were, you know,
yep.
he was definitely a highlight amongst the cast that was brilliant in his own right collective.
Yep, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. There's a reason that he was so 100% absolutely perfect for that role. It was written for him, specifically. The director of A Knight's Tale, what was his name? Brian... pronounce the last name. Hoagland? Hoagland? I'm not sure.
I really can't remember.
Hoagland. Hoagland. Something along those lines. He actually wrote that part, the part of Chaucer, specifically for Paul Bettany, and then pretty much said, "You're going to be on this movie."
Yeah.
Yup. Now, after that film, he was actually out of commission for about 6 weeks. He had laryngitis. Can you guess why?
Vacationing somewhere exotic.
No, because of all the yelling and screaming he had to do while filming that movie.
Okay, that's it.
Yep. But yeah, he was out of commission for a good 6 weeks after the movie, trying to allow his vocal cords and his throat to heal up.
Wow.
Not the only physical problem he's had while filming. He also played Silas in The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, I remember.
Very scary part.
Very much.
Oh, he was so brilliant. I swear to God, everybody who's ever met the man says he's so sweet and he's so nice and blah, blah. I would be terrified to meet him after seeing that movie.
Yeah, he was pretty terrible. It was imposing.
Exactly. But I mean, that was the part. He played it to perfection. And I'm sure that, you know, hearing me say I'd be terrified to meet him after seeing that would just thrill him to no end. You know, because he got the reaction that he was going for.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually had to wear a wig for filming that part.
Wow, really?
Yes. They tried to bleach his hair. They tried to do the whole bleach thing and do it natural. And he suffered a very intense reaction to the bleach on his hair. On
wow.
his scalp.
It was pretty severe. It was pretty much white, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reaction that he had was... I don't understand how he could have stood to wear a wig on top of it. He had lesions on his scalp.
Yeah.
It literally, like, bubbled the skin and just screwed him all up. I mean, it was terrible.
And I think most actors these days, if not all... pretty much just do the wig.
With some exceptions, but yeah, for the most part, because they change characters so often, I mean, it takes anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months to shoot a movie, and that's it. And then you're off to a different character and a different hairstyle and a different hair color, and, you know, yeah, it'd be just smart to wear a wig instead of, you know, trying to do the whole natural hair thing, because you're eventually going to fry it and it's going to fall out.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, you hear a lot of actors and actresses talk about how they have to do, like, these pale white, you know, corn silk, you know, hair.
Oh, yeah.
Rolls, and it just devastates, you know, the scalp.
And the scalp, the hair follicles, the whole nine is just completely destroyed. But, yeah, it not only destroyed his hair, it destroyed the skin, it destroyed, you know, I feel for the man. But I can understand why he was so damn menacing now. My motherfucking head hurts. Get this thing shot so we can get the hell out of here.
Well, you know, Bettany's brown hair, I think, like a dark brown.
He's a red.
He's pretty much a brunette.
Yeah, he's a redhead.
He's a redhead?
Have you seen his freckles? He is a redhead.
And I'm looking at a picture, and he is definitely a redhead.
Thank you. I can spot a redhead. I don't care what color they've dyed their hair. I spot a redhead a mile away.
Yep.
But yeah, he's got that, him and Hiddleston have that in common. It's that ginger, almost brown, but not quite.
A little bit of freckles.
Got the whole freckle thing. He's so cute with those freckles.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. The movie roles where you actually get to see the freckles, I think, are my favorites.
Yeah.
The Tourist. Loved him in The Tourist.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For sure a fantastic role.
Yep. A very driven man in that one.
You know, he did a movie called Wimbledon.
Yes.
With Kristen Dunst. And it was kind of a rom-com. It was about the Wimbledon, you know, tourney. But there were some, hey, it's a rom-com, so you're going to get some close-ups.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, you got the freckles.
Oh, nice. Well, Dunst, when she was younger, Durst, is it Durst or Dunst? With an R or an N?
Dunst.
Okay, with an N. Got it. She has freckles of her own that she hides most of the time.
Right.
And if you've ever seen Interview with a Vampire, yep, she definitely has the freckles going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Wow, actually, that's another movie that connects in with Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
The Wimbledon movie.
Yep. Yeah, he's got quite a few under his belt. Now, a lot of them, a lot of his earlier stuff, were English films. So most Americans are not going to know anything about them. We're getting better at accepting foreign films into mainstream.
Yeah.
Better, not good at all. Not even near great, but better at accepting foreign films. So, you know, hopefully in the future we'll be able to see a bit more of, you know, what England is putting out. Because from what I've seen, they put out some really, really cool stuff.
Oh, certainly.
Yup.
And they have for a very, very, very long time. The English film tradition is very strong.
It is. And as I don't care who says that the English are uptight, and the Americans are the ones who are, you know, we you know, hang loose or whatever. Have you seen English television? And compared it to American television. Okay, we got shit on them. We got nothing on English TV, man. They they are the funniest, the most out there frigging country to produce, you know, series TV that I've ever seen. They pass us, like, by a Texas mile. It's just ridiculous.
And, I mean, they have for a long time.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, we would watch Benny Hill. You remember Benny Hill?
Loved him.
Oh, my God, Benny Hill. And that was some racy.
Kids
racy
in the stuff. Hall. And that's just, what, 30 years ago?
What's that?
Kids in the Hall?
I think that was Canadian.
It was Canadian, but it was patterned after, oh, what was the show in England? I watched it over at Tommy's friggin' religiously. What was the name of that show? Oh, man.
Monty Python, right?
No, it's not Monty Python. It is Kids in the Hall, but the original version. And it was
like
done.
The sketch version.
Yeah, it was done in England, and it had been done since, like, the late 70s, early 80s, whereas Kids in the Hall didn't even get started until late 80s, early 90s at the earliest. Yeah. But it was patterned after a sketch-type show done out of England. So... Yep, I will have to, guys, I will get back to y'all on that. I will look that up and figure out what it is and have it for y'all next week.
Kids in the Hall were great.
Oh, Kids in the Hall were amazing, but there's a lot of things that they could not do in order to be seen on American TV.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the English, they don't have a problem.
No, they don't.
Oh, it doesn't matter whether it's sex or kids or guns or drugs or
drinking or parents or school or college or job or whatever. Doesn't, there are no holds barred. There is nothing that they have a problem talking about. So, you know, talking about and making fun of. So.
Yeah, and making fun of.
Absolutely. Yep. But, you know, of course, one of his most known roles is that of Jarvis and Vision in the MCU.
Yeah.
And he actually broke some barriers here. What was that?
Awesome. Say what?
What was that?
That was me pouring a little bit of water into my glass.
Okay. That I heard.
Much better.
All right, well, you hydrate. Oh, let's see. What am I looking for? Oh, yeah, that's right. The
long day.
What are you doing?
Halfway there.
All right. We are going to have to discuss this later. If I find out you're taking a leak on the podcast, I'm going to be really upset.
I'm trying to concentrate. Wait.
Oh, my God. Okay. Are you done?
Wait.
Jesus.
Okay,
are you right finished? Well, you know, I'm really glad that this is an audio and not a visual because I'm sure my face is so red at this point. Are you done? Shake it more than twice, you're playing with it.
I was gonna say that.
I beat you to it. I just want to beat you. All right. In the MCU, he is the first actor to ever portray two major characters.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, I mean, a lot of people kind of knew if he was going to be Jarvis that he was going to end up being Vision.
Well, but he had not agreed to it. Because for the longest time, he actually said no. He had the idea. He had the idea that the Jarvis voice was one thing, but once Jarvis became Vision, once the voice actually had a body, that more than likely the voice would change, that it would not be the same. And that there would really be no reason for him to absolutely have to play Vision.
And, you know, he left a good out for Marvel to basically say, well, he's a different being, so
right.
He can certainly use a different voice and it'd be believable.
Oh, yeah, as long as it was similar in pitch and tone, yeah.
Sure.
But, you know, in the end, everybody pretty much was unanimous in saying, nope, we want him. We want him.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he is one of the best cast people in the MCU for Vision. He's a fantastic Vision.
Agreed. And he is also, as of Phase 4 of the MCU, he is the only actor to have appeared in the first installment of each phase.
What? Whoa. Really?
Yes.
Okay, that's an accomplishment.
That it is.
Huh. Yeah, you know, Iron Man 1, right?
Yeah. And
right,
then
right.
Start of Phase 2 was the, it was one right after Avengers.
It was Age of Ultron, he was there, and then Phase 2.
Yeah, I was trying to think because, no, I'm sorry. Avengers ends phase. Does Avengers end phase 2? I believe it does.
Maybe.
I'm gonna have to get myself some cheat sheets with the list of Avengers movies in phases, the list of the actors and actresses. And,
We just enjoy the movies. You know, we're not there to...
Right. I don't start thinking about those types of things until I'm in the middle of doing my research for you guys. And I'm telling you, I love IMDb. IMDb website is the bomb when it comes to little known facts and trivia about most of your movies and shows. When it comes to individual people, however,
not so much,
because there's so much of it to gather. So IMDb actually failed me for the last several weeks. I have not been able to find a whole lot on there that I think is interesting enough to bring to you guys. So,
Phase 2 started officially with Iron Man 3.
Okay.
And so, there you go.
Right. But was I right? Avengers ended Phase 2.
No. Avengers Age of Ultron was the second to...
No. Okay, did it end? Okay, the original Avengers movie. Did it? It ended one of the phases.
Accessing and good Lord, woman, your research is flawless. It did.
Phase one, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Avengers ended phase one.
It is my love for all things Marvel.
You are good at this. He actually closed out phase one.
Yep.
And then he started
phase two.
Phase two.
Yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. Yep. Some of the actors that he admires and that that he's looked up to throughout the years. Let's see. Robert De Niro is one. Al Pacino. Of course I had them all written down and now I can't find them after I noted a bunch of crap in my margins too. Here we go. Humphrey Bogart, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Peter O'Toole, Stellan Skarsgård. John Lennon is also another he admires. But he got the chance. He got the chance to meet Robert De Niro, and I'm not sure what they were meeting about. I could not find that information, but he had a scheduled meeting with De Niro. He had a newborn. Jennifer was back to work already. So he had a babysitter scheduled for the time he was supposed to meet De Niro. Well, the meeting got pushed back. He only had the babysitter for 2 hours. So when he ended up meeting De Niro, he ended up doing so with a baby strapped to his chest.
Wow.
Yep. But of course, De Niro is all about his kids. So, it wasn't
I'm
a problem.
Sure.
He understood completely what happened. But yeah, that would,
yes.
I mean, just as a mom in general, if I were to go to a job interview, even if the job interview had called me an hour before I was supposed to be there and said, we don't need you for at least 2 hours, I could still see the look of disgust if I came in with my child strapped to me in some way, But yeah, so he got to meet De Niro, but he did so with the child strapped to his chest.
Yeah.
Yep. And I didn't realize this was the band, you informed me, but the band Blur. He is a huge fan, and he's turned down the opportunity to meet the lead singer twice. Kind of a Pink situation, but I don't think he's hot for the dude. I think he's just nervous.
Right. Blur is an institution.
Absolutely.
Along with Oasis.
Hmm. Yeah.
In England.
Oh, and Green Day. God, got a lot. I'm not sure about England, like, but Green Day is an institution here.
Yeah, it would be like, you know, Billy Bob Armstrong or Scott Weiland from Green Day and Stone Temple Pilots, respectively. I would be crazy nervous.
Yeah, but I think you'd still do it. But see, there again, you don't have a professional reputation that you have to worry about if you actually embarrass yourself or show your ass.
Right. I'm just another fan that's shitting his pants meeting you. Right. I have no shame.
Right,
no,
but,
you're right.
But if Bettany were to do that, yeah, he'd never live that shit down.
Right.
Yeah, he got so nervous he puked on the dude's shoes. I mean, come on.
Exactly. You don't want photos of that getting out, and you don't want, you know, Noel Gallagher being like, dude.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they'd still be telling jokes about that 30 years from now. Now, he's, you know, Bettany is a man of very strong feelings, very strong beliefs, very strong emotions. There's very few things that he absolutely hates. But there are a few, and I have a list.
Okay, let's talk about it.
All right, one of the things he hates, and I get it, emojis.
I get it.
He absolutely hates emojis, and I will tell you why. He's quoted as saying, I try to use words. We used to be gaining words all the time, and now we're losing them. It's sad. And he's right. You know, with all the texting and shorthand that we use nowadays that is universally known just about, you know, IDK, I don't know. You know, NRN, not right now. You know, BRB, you know, just all this. And then you throw the emojis in there too. Yeah, I can get where he's coming from. You know, use your words. That would be smart. Yeah. And he hates the exclamation point. He thinks it's stupid. And I this is referring mainly to, like, text or written word. Mm-hmm.
That's classically English.
He says...
I don't like the exclamation point.
Exclamation points and smiley faces. It says that you're worried that your sentence wasn't clear enough, that you were trying to be funny. So make your sentence funnier. Don't add a smiley face at the end of it.
Right. Right.
Exactly. And, you know, he's one to talk. I don't think the man would ever have to try to be funny. He's just hilarious. Have you ever seen some of his interviews?
His interviews, some of his roles, he's funny. He's got comedic chops, you're right.
The thing about it is, with his acting roles, for the most part, those are written by someone else. But, but like his straight up interviews, his face-to-faces are just hilarious. I love sitting there watching him. He is just fantastic. And he's so humble.
Yeah, he's just a dude when it comes down to him doing the interviews.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, he ended up doing a bunch of interviews promoting WandaVision, and they paired him with Elizabeth Olsen. And actually, I have to say, to her credit, she's got a pretty... funny bone.
She's
pretty goddamn funny too.
Yes.
But it was almost, I was like, how did you guys actually keep this interview together where you got any work done?
Right, without just totally lapsing into, okay, we're just going to give them the show and let them do it.
Right. Just a laugh fest or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, he's pretty funny.
He is. But I love the way the man thinks, and I can sum it up in two sentences. He had this to say about the MCU and just how it's, you know, it started as the comics with Stan Lee and then developed throughout the years, and now we've got this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe that is, you know, all the movies and everything are intertwined, and, you know, he had this to say. He said, America is a very young country, and it's already created its own mythology.
Right.
And that is pretty much the MCU. And when you think about it, you're like, yep, I can see it. You know, this civilization gets destroyed in another 1,000 years. Somebody will dig up some frigging Marvel movies and some comic books. And, you know, next thing you know, Tom Hiddleston and Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Hemsworth will all be revered as gods.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we, you know, and Britain, you know, not to take any away from Britain, but they've had their own pretty good run at comics, different from ours.
Really?
They did strips, and but they did a lot of, you know, they did a lot of comics.
Okay, now see, we did not, my mother owned a comic book shop for a couple of years. But we didn't do a whole lot of the international because there wasn't a whole lot of cause for it. Now, if someone... Of course, this is back in the 90s. This is back in the... Oh, not even 90s. I apologize.
You're talking 80s, right?
Late 80s, yes. Probably 89, 90? Roundabout in there?
Yeah.
But yeah, there was not a lot of call for the international comics. But now we could get them if someone wanted them, but we didn't carry them as a rule.
Yeah, you know, you would have to have somebody that's like, I really want Judge Dredd. You know, that's, you know, who kind of comes to mind, Judge Dredd.
Right. Now, right toward the end of it, we did actually carry Judge Dredd because there was such a demand.
And he was huge, right? Yes. He was the big crossover.
Yup. And, you know, that kind of opened the door, so to speak.
You know, I wonder, with Bettany and a lot of these British actors that are more his age, I'm not talking about Anthony Hopkins necessarily.
Right, but more, you know, our age.
Gen X, you know.
Yeah, our age or younger.
Yeah, or younger.
Yeah.
Because,
honey, we're throwbacks.
Well, you know, I wonder how much they were influenced by their own British comic books. You know, I wonder if Bettany read like 82,000, which is where Judge Dredd came from, you know.
That is an interesting question. Of course, that would not be something that, you know, if you're talking about the MCU, that, you know, your interviewer would necessarily ask. So that is definitely a good question.
You have to kind of be primed, and you read a lot of these interviews or see a lot of these interviews from MCU actors that are like, you know, actually, I did not read those comics, and these are Americans.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could see Bettany just being that open-minded person that was a busker at 16 years old,
right?
You know, in 1986. You know, coming across, like an 82,000 comic book, being like, oh yeah, this is cool.
That would be a question to ask Hiddleston as well.
Yes, and Hiddleston.
But
right.
I kind of doubt it with Hiddleston.
Well, he was very right.
He was more...
He was more Eaton, you know, that...
Yes, was more into the literary classics than literature, if you know what I mean.
Paul was on, you know, and I will give this to Paul Bettany. Paul Bettany was from a privileged background, and through tragedy, he hit the streets, and he bust, you know, and he got the authentic human experience.
Mm-hmm. And he has stayed humble. I love, that's another thing I really love about his interviews is... You know, he never approaches anything with the, I'm all that, you know, hey, I'm Paul Bettany, you know.
Okay.
No, never. You know, he's just, dude, I'm just Paul, man. You know, it's just me. You know, it's just great. He's very humble, and it seems like he doesn't take anything in his life for granted. He's still very, very in love with his wife. He is still very, enchanted with his career. You know, it's like he takes nothing for granted, and he never really wants to get used to any of it, because when it stops being special, it starts being a job.
Right. Yep. You have to like it. at least, if not love it.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, not only does he love it, he still finds himself in awe. And I think it's great. But
and I have to say, it's actually 2000 AD and not 82,000.
What's that?
The comics collection that was huge in Britain that we really wanted it. They also did Miracle Man. I don't know. Britain's got a great... We don't talk about it a whole lot when we talk about the MCU, but there's a lot of British actors and there's a lot of British influence in these MCU movies. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of British influence in these MCU movies.
Yes, and I really would like to know why. You know, because that has never really been explained. We have, you know, wonderful actors and actresses right here in the States. But it seems like most of your major roles in the MCU go to the Brits.
Right. Well, I wonder if it's because they have that tradition of stage acting. I know Bettany started on the stage.
So did Hiddleston.
I know Hiddleston started on the stage. Hiddleston's wife, you know, baby mama, ended up on this. I can't think of one that didn't.
Right.
And I wonder if it's because of that projection and that wonderful tradition that was started before Shakespeare's, you know, the globe was even established.
And it could also be that for a long time, your movies, just watching movies, the actors and actresses quit playing to the audience.
Yeah, right.
But if you're a stage actor, that comes second nature.
Things that you have said, actually, in the last few podcasts, I think you're totally, totally onto something.
Yeah. If you're a stage actor, then it's second nature to play to your audience. You know, change things up. If it doesn't feel right, if it feels like it's getting a little stale, you change it up. Which is exactly what Robert Downey Jr., Tom Hiddleston, Paul Bettany, Chris Hemsworth, you know, the list goes on, is exactly what they do. You know, when they don't like the way things are going, they change it. And it works.
Anthony Hopkins, he had that kind of background, and he was in the MCU.
Yep.
And he was kind of different in each of those portrayals.
Yep. He was able to change his portrayal of the character according to what that character had been through. And that's not something you get with American actors, by and large.
No, it's very thoughtful on that actor's part.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these guys kind of do it for the money, and they're like, just give me the script and I'll emote.
Right.
But it seems like the Brits put more thought into what they're going to say and how they're going to portray it before they get in front of a camera.
And, okay, you know, this is the script, these are the lines, but why would they say this? Why would they act like this? Why is this happening? And if they can't figure it out, then they change it.
Yeah, you know, and whenever I think of Jarvis and his evolution into the Vision, Paul Bettany really, truly, truly, truly evolved that process.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. You are absolutely correct on that one. Throughout his career now, you know, and we both know Bettany is amazing. Throughout his career, he has, since the year 2000, he has been nominated for 28 different awards through various awards, agencies, I guess.
Like the BAFTAs,
right.
The Oscars.
Right.
Oh my God, how many BAFTAs? It's gonna be staggering.
But he's been nominated for 28 different awards. In the year 2000 was the first nomination in this time period. And that was for the British Independent Fan Awards, Best Actor for his role in Gangster No. 1.
Ooh, okay.
And now, out of the 28... he's won 9 of them, and that's actually not a bad average.
No.
Some of these include the London Film Critics Circle, the award for British Supporting Actor of the Year, for his role in A Knight's Tale.
Of course.
In 2006, he won Glamour Awards Man of the Year. And in 2021, he won GQ's Leading Man of the Year.
Oh, whoa, whoa, okay.
Yes, sir.
What year? What year?
2021.
Holy shit, he's still racking them up.
Yeah. Yup, he is still making some really, really cool stuff. Now, he was asked at one time about having to portray a character that has been around since, what, the 50s, the 60s, when Vision came out? And
one of my childhood favorite characters.
When they were talking about the fan expectations and that type of thing, he said, yeah, you feel a lot of pressure to deliver that. And then you realize these characters are happening in every individual person's head. I can't possibly please the imagination of every person who's read The Vision. So I'm just left with what I want to do and what I find interesting.
Well, and you know, The Vision was that interesting character, and that's why I think he was a great, great choice. He gave The Vision more depth than he had in the comics, and he was a pretty deep comic book character.
Well, I mean, when I, because I read the comics back in the day, and, you know, when, you know, I found out that they were actually going to bring Vision to the big, I'm like, oh my God, you're going to bring this narcissistic, everything has to be good and sweet and kind, and because it's supposed to be, and I will do everything I can to make it that way kind of person. You're going to bring that to the, yeah, that's not going to work.
Right. I always really loved The Vision. You know, he's a very, very powerful, Marvel character. And he's also very interesting. And he had probably the most pronounced, other than Jean Grey and Scott Summers and the X-Men, he and Scarlet Witch had the most pronounced romantic relationship in comics. And they were doing this in like the
80s. Right.
You know, and so now we get Paul Bettany, and I knew that he was going to kill it. I was actually apprehensive about Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh, but she rocked it.
She killed it.
Oh, my God.
So, listen, let me ask. Did you enjoy WandaVision? And, I mean, I've heard great arguments for both, and I agree with both.
I absolutely adored it. I loved it.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome. I love the way that each one of the episodes kind of played to one of those old iconic TV shows that we, you know, that we used to watch, the black and whites and stuff. And, you know, you don't see those kinds of... you don't see that type of purity on TV anymore.
Yeah, it really hit the feels, and you do not see that level of purity.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites is when Vision gets... he takes a piece of bubble gum from someone. And...
Yeah.
It gums up his works, and he can't... You know, it's like he's drunk. And it is awesome, because Wanda just kind of... takes control and just kind of steps over and gets everything situated and gets everything calmed back down, and it's just awesome.
You know, Bettany has done, still to me, A Knight's Tale was one of his best performances.
Yes,
and
I
he
agree.
Has done some stinkers. This guy has actually, haven't talked about it, but he's done some stinkers.
Oh, yes,
I'm not just talking about Mordecai.
Okay, Mordecai, no, his character in Mordecai was funny as hell. I just didn't like Mordecai.
Mordecai. But, you know, him in WandaVision, Paul Bettany is a crown jewel in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that was cemented with WandaVision.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe you're right, you know, and I wonder, I'd like to maybe talk to some much younger people that love the Disney Plus subscription that watched WandaVision, but you and I remember, like, Bewitched.
Yeah, we remember the original shows that those episodes were patterned after.
Right, and, you know, Father Knows Best when it was in black and white and that sort of thing.
Yep.
And they killed it.
Yep, the problem is most of the kids nowadays would be looking at it going, okay, I don't understand. Why is there no color? I don't get it.
Let me ask you this. So, would it be better for a viewer, probably younger, would it be better for a viewer to watch the first, like, 5 or 6 episodes back to back instead of individually, like we watch them? Because the first episode came out, and they're like, here's the first episode. And everybody's like, oh my God. And it ended up basically being if Father Knows Best, and people were kind of confused and they thought it was slow.
Right.
Do you think that that was better to watch on the streaming service and watch concurrent episodes back to back?
The thing about that question, all right, if you recognize what those episodes were patterned after,
mm-hmm.
you recognize that,
mm-hmm.
then,
yes.
then, yeah, watch them back to back, because then you start seeing the flow of, because it's not just different episodes, it's a timeline.
It is about the flow.
It's a timeline. If you watch the episodes and go back, Google it, find out when these TV shows came out, when they were popular, it's a timeline.
Right.
So, yeah, it would make sense, and you would be able, but if you don't know where these episodes came from, if you don't know what they were patterned after, I don't know that anything would be able to let you make sense of them.
Right. Precisely.
Yep.
You know, that being said, I enjoyed immensely WandaVision, and it cemented Paul Bettany as just a linchpin the MCU. Up there with Robert Downey Jr.
Yep. Mark Ruffalo.
And maybe I'd actually put him a bit above Ruffalo. Well, Chris Hemsworth.
Hemsworth. No. Yep.
Yeah, he's in that echelon to me.
Absolutely. And the iconic scene where Vision reaches over and hands Thor his hammer.
Wow. Because he is that literally pure.
He is worthy. He is pure.
He is worthy.
Yup.
He's not corrupted by human.
Well, he's not corrupted, period.
He's not corrupted. Right. Right, right.
Not saying it's impossible, just saying that at that moment, he was not. But yeah, I mean, he and Bettany played that role to an absolute T.
He was.
I cannot imagine another actor attempting to play Vision the way that he did.
You're so right.
I can't see it. I mean, there are many, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. There are a bunch of different roles that, yeah, you could see 6 or 8 different actors, or even maybe 1 or 2 different actors could have played it as good, if not better. There are very few that we come across, that we discuss, that we can honestly say, no, if it's not this actor, it's not as good. It's not going to work. You know, and this is one of those.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed that when you need to get the absolute dramatic, this is a love moment or something very sensitive, like Chris Hemsworth, you're not going to get a close-up pan of him emoting. But during, like, WandaVision, you were up in Paul Bettany's face, and he's an amazing actor.
He has got the expression.
All he has to do
is look at the camera, and, I mean, if he wants you to laugh, you're going to laugh. And if he wants you to cry, your ass will be bawling like a baby.
And that's a good point on your part, actually. You know, not just the, you know, the tearjerkers, but, like, if you want to focus in on the comedic or the expressive.
Uh-huh.
Paul Bettany, he's pretty much a boy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is just so good at what he does. And
yes.
The biggest thing is he has the same philosophy as do Tom Hiddleston and Johnny Depp. We've discussed it before. That you have to find yourself in that character. You have to draw similarities between yourself and the character you're playing. Otherwise, it's not gonna look real. It's not gonna feel real. It's not going to work on the big screen.
Exactly.
So, you know, each and every one of those characters that he portrays, he has made the comment that, yeah, you know, he feels like the characters feel. He, you know, he's gone through that pain. He's dealt with that heartbreak. He's had that happiness. You know, he's gone through it. So, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely brilliant. And I am really glad that we chose him as the degree of separation to do this week.
Me too.
He's just, hey, hats off. Paul Bettany, you are an amazing man. Keep doing what you're doing.
He should be celebrated.
Absolutely. And we are running over. My goodness, we are already at almost almost an hour and 10. So So baby, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap this up.
All right.
What do you want to do next week? You want to do another degree of separation?
These are really good.
Yeah, I know.
Kinda.
Okay, so we've done the three like most glaring. So
we need to maybe concentrate on more Johnny degrees of separation. You know, we've been done like MCU.
Well, the thing about it is that's what Hiddleston is known for. So it's kind of hard to figure in a degree of separation
that
doesn't involve the MCU.
I would love, okay, ma'am. And you can reject this. And,
okay, well, spit it out. Let's see.
And frankly, listeners, we can edit this out if this isn't agreeable. But we should do possibly a degrees of separation episode of MCU people that are connected to Johnny Depp, who has not been in an official MCU movie. And we've already covered Bettany.
And Mia. Oh, wait, is Mia's not MCU, is she?
No, she is not.
No, she is one of the few that is not. Okay,
exactly.
dang, all right.
Connecting Johnny to the MCU, I think, will be...
Oh, honey, let's see. Glenn Close, Johnny played with her in several movies, one of which is Into the Woods, and she's in the MCU.
Yeah, well, how much time have you devoted to Into the Woods?
Well, not much yet, because Johnny only does about 15 minutes in that movie. But,
has Johnny ever dealt with Jon Favreau?
I believe so, actually.
It's got to be, right?
He's got, I mean, he would have to have. I will have to look that up, but...
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I would almost bet that he has.
I would love to do an episode where we connect as many times as we can Johnny Depp to the MCU.
Or connect Hiddleston to Tim Burton.
Oh, that's even better.
Nope, not even better. I think I like yours first, and then we'll tell you what, we'll work on them both. So guys, stay tuned. Stay tuned. We're going to do one or the other next week.
Thrilling.
All right, so as usual, let me tell you how you can get in touch with us. We have several ways. We have the website, which is our blog. That is depheadshiddlestoners.com. Or you can go straight directly to barryreese.net, which Barry was supposed to be on the show tonight. He had something come up, so he was not able to do it.
Right.
Yeah, so hopefully we're going to try to get him back next week sometime, or, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see what we can do. But you can go to barryreese.net.
Yeah, well, you know, a guy that's actually tied to the MCU is...
Yeah, he is tied to the MCU, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, but you can go to the blog, or you can go to barryreese.net and hit the link in between. You can call us now at 765-681-7313. That is our direct line that goes to the Depheads and Hiddlestoners answering machine. If I do not pick up the phone, the answering machine will. And we will get back with you as long as you leave us a time zone, a name, and a phone number. We will get back with you as soon as we possibly can. However, Carrie and I both do hold down full-time jobs, so kind of cut us some slack a little bit, okay? We will get back to you as quickly as we can. Let's see. Then we've got the email, if you would prefer. That is depheadsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. We are on Facebook, Deb Heads and Hiddlestoners Group. We are on Instagram, Deb Heads and Hiddlestoners. I believe that's about it. Anything else?
I think that's it. You have covered all the bases.
I try. I really do. Yeah, I know. I'm very trying. All right, guys. We have had a blast recording this show. I hope you guys have a blast listening to it. And we will be back next week with Tom Hiddleston connected to Burton, or Johnny Depp connected to the MCU. We will figure it out. Until then, peace and love. If you can't be good at it.
Peace and love.
Absolutely. Choose love, not war.
That's right.
We will see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.